Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Monday Night Radio. Monday night is your night to talk with the experts. Call us now to get into the queue at 866-MONDAY-6. That's 866-MONDAY-6. Call us now. Or email your questions and comments to comments@mondaynightradio.com or tweet them to us at Monday Radio. And now, here's your host, Ann P. Mitchell, Esquire.
Special guest. He is one of the stars of Animal Planet Emergency Vets. But even more than that, he is just a darn wonderful veterinarian and a really funny guy. His name is Dr. Kevin Fitzgerald, and he is here to talk with us about poisonous Christmas plants, hypothermia and frostbite, all of the problems you might run into with your pets and holidays and holiday pet safety, and just about anything else we're going to throw at him as well. So please join me in welcoming Dr. Kevin Fitzgerald. Dr. Fitzgerald, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on. I'm delighted to be with you and your listeners.
Well, we are very pleased to have you here. As you may be aware, we are a very animal-friendly bunch, and so we're really, really happy to have you here with us. And we are listening to Monday Night Radio, and you can email Dr. Fitzgerald your comments at comments@mondaynightradio.com. You can also call us on our Monday Night Radio line at 866-MONDAY-6. You can send questions via Twitter to @MondayRadio or find us on Facebook at Monday Night Radio on Facebook. So, Dr. Fitzgerald, before we sort of get into the grist for the mill, if you will, of what's going on in the holidays that is particularly dangerous or perhaps not clear in terms of being a danger to pets and their owners or their people, you're billed as having taken what some call the unconventional route to being a veterinarian. Would you be willing to share with us what was so unconventional about that?
Well, it's hard to think of yourself as unconventional. All I know is my side of it. So it seemed pretty conventional to me, but actually it wasn't. I didn't get into veterinary school when I first applied, and they said, well, show us you want to do something. So I went to graduate school, and I got a master's and a PhD, and I put myself through college doing security for bands, for different promoters. Oh. So my promoter here in Denver, Barry Fay, and then for Bill Graham. So I worked for the Rolling Stones and the Who, and I worked for Willie Nelson, and I worked for anybody that Bill Graham put on the road between, 1969 and 82, and it was great to be a little boy from Denver and get to travel and see the world, and it was like running away with the circus. I'd worked for the Rolling Stones, the 69 tour, 72, 75, 78. At the end of the 1978 tour, Keith was paying the bouncers himself, and he was in charge of the bouncers, and he said, why don't you do something with your life? Keith Richards, he's the coolest cat in the world, and when he says something, you listen. And so he said, you've been with us 69, 72, 75. This isn't going to last forever. I don't think he ever dreamed that still would be playing. He said that the people are fickle. He said, you got to do something with yourself. You have to, why don't you get a grip on yourself and go back to school or do something. And so I flew back to Denver, and my brother picked me up at the airport, and I said, Keith told me I got to get a grip on things. So I applied to veterinary school again, and the second time I got in, it was 8 years later. But I think it points out, and that our lives aren't foot races. We aren't one dimensional, and we can go in different directions and do different things. And I do stand up you need something that's not like work. I've been doing stand up for 25 years, and recently I've gotten to open some cities for Joan Rivers and for Dennis Miller.
Very, very nice. And that is certainly a very different gig than working as you do. And I'm sure, of course, on Animal Planet, and it's emergency vets, so it's always very high, emergency stress and highly emotional. I hope for your sake it's not always like that in your regular practice, but certainly I imagine it's rather different than going out on the stand-up circuit. So it's nice that you sort of have that balance. And what I have to ask you then, of course, is so did, in fact, being on the road with the Stones prepare you for vet school? And is that why you got in the second time?
Well, Keith helped me. I mean, he was always very kind and very supportive and is the nicest guy in the world, you know, and very professional. And I think that as his book shows. And so, it, I mean, nothing happened by chance with those guys. And they're very, you know, very organized. And you know, I think that watching that and seeing that, you know, you can do something you really enjoy. I work as a veterinarian, you know, 5 days a week, and I've been at it for 28 years at a busy 24-hour hospital, and it's a harsh mistress, veterinary medicine, but the rewards are great. I've been able to go with the Denver Zoo to observe polar bears and to go with the North American Veterinary Medical Society to the South Pole to look at penguins. I went to with the zoo to Mongolia to put radio transmitters into Argali sheep and ibex goats, cinereus vultures, and some desert vipers. And so I think, you know, our lives aren't one dimensional. You know, you can do stand up and you can do veterinary medicine and who knows, you know, I mean, maybe I'll tap dance.
The thing that strikes me is that it's all service. You're performing a service and providing relief in the service in all of those capacities. And I'm not sure if that's how you see it, but certainly as a veterinarian, you're providing a service to the animals and to their people as well. But even doing stand-up, you're giving people some relief and some comedy to sort of take them away for a while. And to you know, again, it's a service that you're performing just in a different venue.
That's very kind. That's very kind. I think... I don't know necessarily of comedy as a service, but maybe it is. But I think isn't that maybe the highest form of human activity when we help somebody else? I mean, isn't that the best thing we can do? And none of us do it enough. You know, none of us do it enough. Nobody laughs enough. You know, I think that I don't do enough community service things. One thing, I've been a judge for the Denver Public Schools for the last 25 years for science fairs, and I was at one the other day, and this little girl came around her exhibit entitled The Atom, and what I've learned about the science fairs is the little kids don't write their own spiels. The parents do these exhibits and all,
mm-hmm.
write all the things. And this little girl said, you know, it was about ants it was about the atom. And she goes, you know, the atom's very small and can't be seen by the naked observer. You know, so you can't write.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a little girl.
No, the naked observer. You know, she just, and so you can't write funny things that really happen with our lives. And I think people should keep a notebook or something, because the stuff that happens. A woman came in with a puppy and she said, "Quick, my puppy's been poisoned. Someone give me an anecdote."
No.
So,
oh no. Were you able to keep a straight face?
Well, I mean, people are, you know, she needs help, and she wants you to help her, and so you can't laugh at her. But, I mean, afterward, you know, we're all dying. And so I think that every day our lives bring us, you know, if we would look for it, some joy.
You're listening to Monday Night Radio with Dr. Kevin Fitzgerald, the emergency vet, and just sounding so far like also a darn nice guy and a funny comic. And you can call in with your questions or comments for Dr. Fitzgerald, particularly about holiday pet safety or pretty much anything else that has to do with the veterinary field. And you can call on our Monday Night Radio hotline at 866-MONDAY-6. That's 866-MONDAY-6. Or you can email us questions or comments for Dr. Fitzgerald at comments@mondaynightradio.com or send us a tweet. Oh, I really dislike that word, but there you have it. Send us a tweet via Twitter at Monday Radio. Well, just one other thing that I have to ask before we turn to the meat of the show again, if you will.
Yeah, this is
that I'm well familiar with the you know, my daughter worked as an emergency veterinary technician for quite a while. She's still in the animal rescue field, in fact. And so I've been exposed to the sort of macabre sense of humor you have to develop when you are faced with just tragic situations, particularly with helpless animals every day. And it's, I think all medical professionals sort of get to this point where, you know, they're joking about things that others might not find at all funny. But again, it's a way of dealing with some of the really darker stuff you see every day. And does that sort of humor find its way into your comedy routines, or do you really keep that separate and is your comedy routine kind of lighter?
Yeah, I think you need to keep it lighter. I think you have to be careful of that. Certainly there becomes a gallows type of humor. But I think you have to really strive to not become too hardened to it and to still be touched by what happens to these animals. What I've found is that, you know, that the American Veterinary Medical Association did a telephone survey in 1957 where they asked people, do you think your pet's part of the family? And in 1957, 43% of Americans said, yes, the animal is part of the family. They did the same survey in 2007, 50 years later, and they found that 97% of Americans thought that the animal, the companion animal, the pet, was part of the family. So there's been a change in how people perceive the animal as we become more gray as a population, the empty nesters and the baby boomers that never married. These animals become much more, I think, than just companions. And so particularly for, you know, very elderly people, it's great. You know, they have to get some exercise with the animal, and they have to get out there, and it gives them some responsibility. They've got to go get the food, and they've got somebody to still take care of. And so I think that as we become more urban and away from nature, I think that the tiger on your couch and the wolf in your living room, you know, even though he's a dachshund, not really a wolf, and it's a calico and not a tiger. But, you know, we for some reason, people need animals. They don't need us, and you know, we sure need them, and they enrich our lives. And so I think you have to be careful in a little bit about, you know, the gallows humor and making it too dark. You know, you try and, I don't know, I think you can maybe educate while you entertain. You can't write funnier things than really happened. The other night on the news, they had fired the Denver Bronco coach, and they were asking on the sports, they said, if you call in right now to the phone company, you pay a dollar, give me your credit card, and you vote whether they should have fired him or not fired him. You give us your opinion. At the end of the broadcast, we're going to tell you what the results of the survey were. And at the end of the time, they said, 65% of the people thought he should be fired, 30% thought that he should be retained, and 5% were undecided. Well, how do you get up and pay a buck and say I'm undecided? You know, if you're going to pay a buck, you know, I mean, I was like, who are these people? You know, so you can't, I mean, you can't even write. I was watching that thing, I was dying. I was like, you know, wait a minute, 5% got up and said, you know, I have no opinion. I'm happy to pay a buck, but I don't really, I really have
that's
no opinion.
Jesse, there is comedy everywhere, and I have to admit, I actually had a chuckle when you said about the tiger on the couch and the wolf. I've actually had a few wolves in my living room, although they were two-legged, so that kind of brought me back there. But in any event, you're right. You see comedy everywhere, and it doesn't really have to be dark. Let's talk now about holiday pet safety, just because that's, you know, at least ostensibly
well,
why you're here.
Right. That's right. This is an important time of the year. This is an important time of the year, and it brings us, you know, lots of people to the house, and the house becomes the center place. And we bring in a lot of ornamental plants into the house this time of year. Poinsettia, the beautiful red, and some are white and pink, actually, Christmas plants. And those big red, those are leaves, not actually flowers. And the whole plant is poisonous, teething puppies and naughty cats that want to chew on things. But this is an overrated one. But the whole plant has a irritating milky sap that can cause irritation to the gums and tongue and cause some GI upset. But it's really not that poisonous. Mistletoe again, the whole plant, the leaves, the stem, the berries, and they are attractive for some reason. I don't know why. Maybe boredom, or I don't know with cats why they do it. Many dogs, I think, want to carry things in their mouths naturally, and teething puppies for sure want to do these things. But again, this one, mistletoe, it's American mistletoe is the one that we use as the ornamental houseplant. And but it's I guess you could get into trouble if they ate a ton of it and get a foreign body, but it's really not that much of a poison. Some ones that are a little bit more irritating, Christmas holly, you know, with the spiky leaves, the shiny leaves and red berries, a little more irritating. The sap in these is tough. And then the English ivy that people sometimes use as wreaths, and you know, it can be irritating. But there's also Christmas cactus and that calico. Both these plants can be tough. But the types of things, the preservative in the base of the tree is really just water and dextrose. But the dextrose can allow bacteria to grow, so we can get some upset there. We also can have the dog chew on pine cones that are used ornamentally or on the tree itself. But the real trouble that we see is tinsel. Tinsel for cats is so bad. It's so bad. And it causes a linear foreign body, and they play with it as it dangles and wrap it around their paws and swallow it, and it's dreadful. So no tinsel, please, if we have dogs or cats in the house. Also, electrical cords for the Christmas tree lights should be up and out of the way of teething puppies, because they can chew on it and become electrocuted. I think lit candles this time of year with cats can be, you know, very dangerous. And so we have a lot to think about this time of year. Also, we get food poisoning. You wouldn't think of it, but grandma's old potato salad thrown away the day after Christmas, or gravy, or pie crust, all of these can allow bacteria to grow. Pie crust insulates it, and gravy, what a great petri dish for that. And also, seeing anything with mayonnaise in it, like all the potato salads and egg salads, those can be tough. So if they've been out very long, they should be disposed of. And we have to dispose of them in ways that animals can't get to them. And a lot of dogs are ingenious and big enough to knock them over. So I think we have to be careful.
Well, so, and I, you know, I think a lot of people think that animals are much smarter than people in some of those regards, and so tend to think that if food is spoiled, an animal won't eat it. But it sounds like you're saying that's not necessarily the case.
It's definitely not necessarily the case. You know from your experience with wolves, wild dogs are gorgers. They might not get a meal every day, and anything they come across, they're going to gorge. Also, teething puppies and young dogs experience the world through tasting it. And so, they taste or bite into anything. And old food, they'll just gulp it. Now, cats are a little different. I think, you know, cats don't gorge as much as dogs will, and particularly these young growing puppies. Older dogs might be a little bit more experienced and realize that if something tastes bad or smells bad, but I think for many dogs, the smellier the better. I think that we have to be careful.
You're listening to Dr. Kevin Fitzgerald. He is one of the emergency vets on Animal Planet's Emergency Vets, and also eVets, and we'll ask him in just a moment what the difference between those two shows is. But you can give us a call and speak with Dr. Fitzgerald at 866-MONDAY-6. That's 866-MONDAY-6. Or email us questions at comments@mondaynightradio.com. Send us a Twitter message at Monday Radio, or find us on Facebook at facebook.com Monday Night Radio. And before, Dr. Fitzgerald, before I ask you the question about eVets versus emergency vets, I kind of want to back up a minute to tinsel, because as disgusting and gross as this may sound, it is possible for your cat to have ingested tinsel to the point where you will see it hanging out from under their tail. Am I right? And I've always been told what you should definitely not do is do not pull on it, but get your animal to a vet. Is that accurate?
That's very accurate. It can be, you know, wrapped around the tongue, the base of the tongue, and so when you pull, the tongue disappears. So it's bad. Never pull on it. And so I think any time that your dog ingests anything, your veterinarian is as far away as the telephone. And so I think that having your veterinarian's number prominently placed and that everybody in the family knows where it is. And so this time of year also with fires, you know, man, you know, many veterinary hospitals and certainly fire departments have little labels for the door that says how many people and also how many animals live in that house. Mm-hmm. So if there is a fire, they can know who's in there.
That's a really good point. That's really important. We actually have two goats in our backyard, and I'm not sure the fire department is willing to wrangle them. And so far, we haven't been able to find goats in the backyard stickers, but we do have them for our dogs and cats. One other thing. I myself have so many questions, and we have callers and emails, but I kind of get the first crack because, hey, I'm the host. Chocolate, that's a huge problem during the holidays, isn't it?
And well, that's right. What kinds of foods are there? And chocolate is, do dogs have a sweet tooth? No question. Now, let's look at chocolate. Chocolate is made from the cocoa bean, and so it has a methyl xanthine called theobromine in it, which is a first cousin of caffeine, which is in coffee, and theophylline in tea. Now, this theobromine, this methyl xanthine, that's what gives us the buzz. That's when you have that last 20 minutes to drive and you pull over and get some gas and you get a cup of coffee and you get a candy bar. In people, the half-life is short-lived. We only get, you know, probably, 20 to 40 minutes to 60 minutes. But the half-life in dogs is long because of the nature of their metabolism and how they break it down. So we can get 17 and a half hours. And so the buzz that they get is longer and higher. And it's not so much milk chocolate as much as it's uncooked baking chocolate. In 28 years of practice, I've seen two deaths from chocolate. And they both happened in dogs under 20 pounds, and they both had eaten large amounts of unsweetened baking chocolate. Now, that's the one when you're at your grandmother's and she's cooking and she's making brownies and she's got this square of chocolate on the counter and you say, "What's that?" And she says, "Chocolate." And you taste it and you go, "Oh, that's not chocolate." when we make milk chocolate, we roast it and we ferment it and it produces sugar. And it cooks off the theobromine. And so at 90% of it. So we only get 45 milligrams per ounce of theobromine for an ounce of chocolate and for milk chocolate. But for baking chocolate, it's 450. So it's 10 times as much of the theobromine. So it, unsweetened baking chocolate is one. Now, milk chocolate itself can be tough. As you know, when you're a kid, your mother gave you nice money to go to get lunch after the movie, but you spent all the money on chocolate in the theater, and it's tough on your stomach, and it can cause GI irritation and vomiting. And so it can be, dogs that eat chocolate can be irritated, but really the dangerous one is the unsweetened baking chocolate. We have 2 to 4 hours to make animals vomit, and hydrogen peroxide is a great way to do it, but your veterinarian can do it so much more efficiently and faster, and so we waste time, and let's get right to your veterinarian if you think that they should vomit. Now, the problem is the 90-pound lab that eats one Hershey's Kiss doesn't need to have the stomach pumps, okay? But we're talking about the 10-pound Maltese that ate the 5 ounces of baking chocolate, you know, he could be in trouble. And what it does is that buzz, how does chocolate give us the buzz? How does caffeine and theobromine in chocolate, how do they give us buzzes? Well, they release calcium. They help release catecholamines like epinephrine and norepinephrine, and they work on the smooth muscle membrane. So we get a buzz from it, and it takes up the heart muscle. And so it raises a heart rate, and it raises it in dogs too high for too long. And if you lose them, you lose them quickly, and you lose them to cardiac arrest. So that's the problem. But I think we have to be realistic about, you know, we should know in the house, you know, what's poisonous in the house? What are the different things? It's amazing to me how many people don't know what plants they even have in their own house. They come to me after the cat's chewed up a bunch of plants with a giant pile of green chewed up leaves and go, "Do you know what this is?" And you go, "Wait, I'm not a botanist," you know. And also, if your animal is poisoned by something in the house, bring the original container, if it chewed into a container or it chewed into medicine, so we know what the active ingredient is, so we know what we're dealing with, and we know how much and how many pills are in there and how strong they are. To me, the most dangerous room in the house is the bedroom because of the nightstand and people having medications on the nightstand. And sadly for animals and children, many medications are flavored. And again, dogs certainly have a sweet tooth. Not so much cats, but the dogs are naughty and they can certainly get on the bed and they're ingenious in getting on tabletops. And we shouldn't keep medicine where we have foods or on the nightstand. And old medicine should be taken back to the pharmacist to be disposed of, not tipped down the toilet because it ends up in our water supply, or not left in the trash because dogs think anything in the trash is fair game and food. And I just saw a thing in the New England Journal of Medicine that said one half of all medications in the United States that's prescribed is never given. And that's really true. If you look at my mother's medicine cabinet, she's got stuff from the 60s. You go, what is this? Why do you still have this? And she goes,
well, they gave me that antibiotic, and I took it for a few days, and then I was better, and I still had some left, so I kept it in case I ever needed it again.
So we have so much old medicine out there, and this stuff is on shelves, and so we get into problems.
Right. So I don't forget, e-vets and emergency vets. I confess, I don't have television.
Oh.
So I have seen emergency vets, but not e-vets, because it's been a while. They're both running now, though. Is that right? And are you on both shows?
Well, no, they're in reruns. We did 9 seasons of Emergency Vets, which was just our animal hospital, and featured all the different veterinarians at the hospital and the producers, the Animal Planet people, and the nice people at High Noon that filmed it. They had a producer who would decide which stories would be followed. And it was a great time. And Animal Planet, it was just starting off, and it was a magic time. And the first 9 seasons were great. And then it switched to Emergency Vets, the interns. Our practice has an internship program where we train young veterinarians right out of veterinary school. And it followed young veterinarians as they, for a few seasons, had followed these young veterinarians as they become tested by fire and become acid tested, and it follows their first year of cases that they see and shows them from coming out of school that these young veterinarians that are so so green, and then by the time they've had a year in the trenches, they're well on their way. So that was the difference.
Very. And did you find when you were practicing and also having the cameras around, what was that like? And how was that for, I have to assume now, and this is the lawyer in me talking, that if you had, if they were patients of the day that were coming in, that they would have to sign a release first. And how did that all work?
People had to sign a release. If you would ask me, I would have told you that 90% of people with their animals hurt and it was an emergency would have said, turn that camera off. But the majority of people, in just only a few cases I can remember, were not interested in having the story followed. The majority, far and away the majority, were nice. And then to the nice people, the original producer, Karen Schaefer-Weiser, was so wonderful, and it was her real vision and her voice that made the show in the beginning, and she said, listen, we will be like a fly on the wall. There was a producer and a cameraman and a sound person, and they really were, but you never really forget the cameras there, it's tough, it doesn't blink, and there'll be so many times where you're an attorney, so you know the law, and if I asked you, listen, can I ask you 3 things about a will? I'm going to ask you this question in 5 minutes, so please think about it. I'm going to come back in 5 minutes. And you had time to think about it, you'd be very well spoken and do great. But if I just put a camera in your face and said, Ms. Mitchell, could you tell me 3 things about wills? And you might stammer a little. Well, I'll, as you're thinking and trying to, bring it up back out of your memory. So it was that part of it was tough. The other part was I never could really watch the show because I couldn't see myself on TV. It's weird seeing yourself. I'd think, that's not my neck, that's my dad's neck. You know, you think, I can't look that old. What do I do? That's what I look like. But it was a wonderful experience. And I think, you know, we tried to show veterinary medicine in a positive light and show at the turn of the century where veterinary medicine was, what we could offer people, and what types of problems that pets and pet owners would get into, and the changing dynamic of what we can offer. I've been out of veterinary school almost 30 years, and I mean, we have a CAT scan in our place and an MR. We have ultrasound. We have specialists now. We have three boarded surgeons. We have three boarded internal medicine people. We have an oncologist. We have a neurologist. We have a cardiologist. We have a boarded dentist. We have a dermatologist that comes, you know, and works with us. We have boarded radiologists that can read the CAT scans and films and add your accuracy. And then there's the poor but honest general practitioners like myself that see whatever the streets of a major urban city can throw at them. So, and then, you know, it's been an amazing ride. I think it's a golden time for veterinary medicine because we can offer so much more. And people expect so much more. People have exotic animals. 6% of American homes have a non-traditional pet. Could be a goat, could be birds, reptiles. I see anything with a heartbeat. You know, we'll see ferrets. And that brings up another thing. I mean, these things go in fads. And for your listeners and viewers, you know, the people that are listening tonight and coming across also online, we need to speak up about, you know, these animals aren't fads, and to give an animal as a gift without telling the other person, not a great idea. You should research the animal that you take home. It might not be right for your lifestyle. We should try and match it to our lifestyle and see. We should see if it fits. I mean, do you have a yard? Are you gone all the time? Do you travel? You know, are you a cliff dweller and live on the 11th floor of an apartment building? You know, an Irish setter might not be the dog. Maybe a cat. Maybe, you know, you have children that are allergic to animals. I mean, you know, people, I think, sadly take animals home all the time and don't realize some of the different problems. They don't realize in taking beagles home that these animals can bellow and bay, or that huskies are very vocal, or Siamese cats want to talk all the time. Or
that goats go into heat every 3 weeks and are even more vocal than Siamese cats.
Yes, that's right. So I think people need to do their homework. And, you know, things go in fads. 10 years ago, you know, 15 years ago, pot-bellied pigs. You know, not a great thing. Woman came in with a pot-bellied pig. She goes, he makes a pretty good pet, but woo, what a smell. Well, he's a pig. He's a pig in your house. I mean, what did you think? You know, now giant spiders. You know, people have spiders. A guy came in with a plastic shoebox and it's a giant spider. And being veterinarians, we're not supposed to be afraid of any animals. And I'm afraid of spiders. They got hair and saliva. That's wrong. You know, a bug shouldn't have hair on it. And this guy came in, he's got this giant spider. He goes, be really careful. He got out a year ago. He bit my roommate in the face and he had to have his head drained. And I was like, well, yeah, you know, I was petrified. I was like, well, get a phone book, you know, let's drop a phone book on you. But, you know, you can't say that, and that's not a practice builder, dropping a phone book on your patient. So we have to give the guy some help. These people are buying these things in pet stores and paying money, and they expect the right answers. So I said, well, what's wrong with him? And he said, well, he's just not himself. And I said, well, it's not his perky spider self. He called in late for work. I mean, what are you talking about here? And he goes, he hasn't eaten in several weeks, and yesterday his leg fell off. So I was trying to think.
Had the spider molted? Was it?
Yeah. Well, I was trying to think of some learning to tell the guy. I said, you know, it's been my experience when the leg comes off, they're obviously ill, and you know that sounded right. And so then I remember the Museum of Natural History has old Dr. Licht over there here in Denver, and I said, go see Dr. Licht, the spider expert. He's going to see it. About an hour later, Dr. Licht called me up and said, Dr. Fitzgerald, Dr. Licht, and he said, did you send Mr. Montgomery over here with this humongous spider? I said, yeah. He said, did you tell him, in your opinion, when the leg came off, they're obviously ill? And I said, yeah. And he goes, well, if you had taken the time to examine him, you'd see he's in fact dead. But I just didn't want to get my head drained or whatever that guy said in the beginning. I was just, you know. But the point is, these are not fads. These are living creatures that share the same life force that we do. And so to have, you know, now it's spiders, and last year it was sugar gliders, and before that hedgehogs. And so these animals, they can live a long time. You know, reptiles, some of the turtles, you know, can live 50, 60 years. A parrot can live 75. And so before you take this animal home, is this the right animal? Can you care for it? Are you going to be able to do what this animal needs? And have you researched it? So these are not fad creatures, and it makes me sad, and I think that people need to stand up and speak up about what's being sold in pet stores.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And we are going to go to some listener questions, and you're listening to Monday Night Radio with Dr. Kevin Fitzgerald, the emergency vet. And the number to call in to talk with Dr. Fitzgerald is 866-MONDAY-6. Or, as our listeners seem to be doing mostly tonight, you can email us your questions at comments@mondaynightradio.com or send them via Twitter to @MondayRadio. Or you can send them out in our chat room. We have quite a few listeners hanging out in the chat room, and you can certainly send us a question that way. So, Dr. Fitzgerald, one of our listeners has called in, or written in, actually, an email, and they want to know, are raisins actually bad for dogs?
That's a great question. And in the early to mid-90s, we started to see dogs that had eaten raisins start to show some problems. And so we didn't know about it. And so raisins are dried grapes, and we started to see some problems with grapes too. And so we look at different things for this. You know, at first we thought that maybe what was happening is that these grapes were fermenting and these animals were getting that these animals were developing and showing signs of alcohol intoxication. But now we know that grapes and raisins can cause acute renal failure and kidney problems. And so what we see is we thought, wow, is it alcohol? And then we thought, well, maybe it's mold in the grapes. And then, we can't find any of the aflatoxins and tannins and different mold toxins. So then they thought there's pesticides, but now we know that it's not all dogs. Some dogs can eat it, but you should never try and see, because your dog may not be one of the ones. But it looks like some kind of is it a food allergy or some type of idiosyncratic reaction with certain dogs. And so no, I think no dog should be given grapes or raisins.
Okay, we have another question that came in via Twitter, which says, we heard that you do something special with turtles in a bar. Can you tell us about that? And, can you tell us about that if you won't get in trouble? Turtles in a bar.
No. Well, at one point, because of OSHA regulations, my boss wouldn't let me work with some of the different ways that we would repair turtle shells when they were hurt. And so we see here in Colorado some of the wild turtles that are hit by cars or turtles that are chewed by dogs. And so there's a certain Irish bar that I would go to once in a while just for religious purposes. And so educational purposes and a learning experience to broaden my horizons. And so my friend who owns the bar gave me a really nice area in the back, and we got a nice, we call it the turtle room. We made a nice surgical sterile area back there with equipment. And we fix turtles that are hit by trucks and chewed by dogs and mauled. And we've done hundreds of them now, and we re-release them and so I think if God's a turtle, I'm in good shape. But they're great animals, you know. They're
they are
the oldest reptile, and then you know it's nice. I've got several young students that usually would come with me, and we've tried different things to fix the shells. We tried fiberglass. You can't use it for the water turtles because they sink, but for the terrestrial tortoises, and then it pushes it off after about a year. But there's better ways now with cable ties and with different cerclage wire and implants. And so methylmethacrylate and different things we've tried over the years. And so I like turtles. I think they might be maybe my favorite animal. And I hate to see it when they're, well, I hate to see anybody hurt.
So you're saying that OSHA wouldn't allow you to use whatever it was that you
figured
out?
Some of the things
where
there might be, yeah, where there might be. But how can you have you know bad smells in an Irish bar? You know, there's stale perfume and old beer, and you know, maybe somebody barfed over here, and, you know, and so. You know, it smells. It, you know, it, people smoking cigars even after the ban, and so nobody noticed a little methylmethacrylate smell.
Isn't that the stuff they use to make artificial nails?
Yeah. You're exactly
interesting.
Right.
Interesting. Very creative.
So it gets pushed off in about a year, and the new shell's underneath and pushes off. You just have to make sure that there's no infection underneath or parasites or anything that's gotten in there, and so. I like turtles a lot, and the poor stray things that are brought in. I was very lucky. I had a great mentor, Dr. Taylor, my boss, and he said, we're never going to turn away anything that's brought into us, and 28 years we never have.
Well, I just want to commend you for doing that, and for, you know, I think I mentioned that, you know, in my family, my daughter has worked in animal rescue, and I have also seen her have to deal with just sort of petty and ridiculous regulations that were counter to helping the animals, the very animals that everyone was trying to help. So I give you a lot of credit for doing that. Thank you. From, you know, speaking for the turtles, thank you so much for doing that. Here's another question. Another question that came in by email is, how do I know if my dog has ingested something like a poisonous plant or that bad potato salad?
No, that's right. Well, I think let's look at our dogs and let's check them every day. And by recognizing the normal, we're going to recognize the abnormal that much quicker. Where are your dog's lymph nodes? Under the jaws, right in front of the shoulders, under the armpits, in the groin, behind the knees. Feeling for lymph nodes, looking at the color. Some dogs are pigmented like Black Labs or Scotties, but most of them have nice and pink gums like us, and are the gums nice and pink? Breathing rate, is he panting? Is he open mouth breathing? Is there a discharge? How are his pupils? Are they the same size? Are they dilated? Are they pinpoint? Do they respond to light? What should a dog's temperature be? You can get nice ear thermometers now for dogs that are inexpensive. And so, you know, their temperature, 100.5 to 102.5. Same for cats. I mean, you know, how's the breathing rate? Is he wobbly? Is he weak? Is he eating? I think paying particular attention to a dog's eating habits, I think, and cats' eating habits. A cat that doesn't eat is sick. People talk about cats being persnickety eaters, but they're good eaters, and so are dogs. And so you know that they're... regimen, you know, has he defecated today? How many times does he urinate? Is he urinating more or less? Is he drinking? You know, and so I think these are the things to look at and to see. I think really three things to think about with our animals, three A's, attitude, appetite, and activity. How's his attitude? Is he somebody that rings the doorbell and does he do his usual things? His attitude is all right. You know, he sees himself. Activity, is he moving well? Appetite, is he eating? So these are the things that we see. And you know, these guys enrich our lives. And, boy, the eating, I mean, that brings up a whole other thing. I've got to come back sometime. And the biggest problem I see is obesity in animals. We say that now 40 to 45% of Americans are overweight. It's come down to our pets. Many of these dogs, every time they dance, the band skips, you know. I mean, they're too heavy. And being overweight, it's not just cosmetic. You know, being overweight causes problems with your heart or with arthritis. It can cause problems with diabetes, of course. And so many health things now we know are linked directly to obesity. And so Lucretia said we dig our graves with our teeth. And so that's really true. I think that for us, these dogs and cats, you are the gatekeeper. You're the one who decides how much they eat, and everything that it goes into their mouth, you're in control of, and we can do so much a better job. You know, I think that, you know, Americans are overweight, and so are our animals.
Well, now, Dr. Starr, I'm pretty sure that I just heard you say you'll have to come back and talk more about eating. So did you just invite yourself back? Because we'd love to have you.
No, this is the best because, you know, I think that, you know, I've really tried to research it well and to have some things to say. And I think that with the pet owning public in the United States is well educated. The people that I see, I see only good people all day. There's people that want help and have recognized some problem and have come in. So I don't see bad people. I see animal lovers. And so that's so nice. You know, what I do every day is a privilege. It's not my right. It's not, you know, it's a gift what I do. I get to see people and hopefully they trust you enough to take care of their animal. And you got two patients. You've got the animal and you've got the family to take care of.
Well, we have a question from the chat room about someone. I'm not so sure you'd agree to, that this is someone. Well, I'll let you judge for yourself. The question is, she says, or he says, a friend of mine thinks it's funny to let her dog have a beer as a holiday treat. Is this okay?
Well, I think, you know, I mean, you think it's funny to see him stumble or stagger and many dogs will drink beer, and so I think, I mean, would you let a child have a beer? Would you have let a, you know, I think there's, you know, morally you think of age of reason or whatever. I mean, if I have a beer and I understand what it's doing to me, and then, you know, what the results are, that's my business and that's my choice. But these guys have no choice. And they depend on you for good judgment, and that person showing bad judgment, and that's not kind. You know, these are little creatures that depend on you, and they share the same life force that we do, and they deserve better than that.
I completely agree with that, and I'm glad to hear that the answer was no, that that's not cool. Let's go to the phone.
Yeah, I mean, you're their guardian, and is that a good guardian? You know, would you let your four-year-old niece have a beer? I mean, come on. You know, let's show a little common sense and a little decency.
Absolutely.
And I'm not a prude, you know. I mean, and you know,
how
I
could
like
you be
with
your background?
as much as the next guy, I like a beer, but I think, I think they depend on us for good judgments, and they're dependent little creatures, and they deserve our protection.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? They, all over the world, the animals deserve our protection. The animals are talking to us, and are we listening?
Oh, I absolutely. Amen to that. Let's go to Gabe in Boulder. Gabe is on the line. Hi, Gabe. You're on the air with Dr. Fitzgerald. How are you tonight?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you, buddy?
Hello?
What's your question?
I have questions about secondhand smoke and health risks for pets. Is there any health risk from, like, people smoking indoors? Because I have my grandma, like, smoke cigarettes inside the house, and she's got this little dog. I'm wondering if it's, like, poses any risk to the animal just from, like, having people smoking inside.
Well, that's a great question. And the way I would answer that is I have this lady that is an elderly lady that smokes like crazy, and I do house calls over there, and the whole place smells like cigarettes, and her Persian cat sits on her lap all day long while she watches TV and knits, mm-hmm. and does her things, and, you know, talks to her friends on the phone, and the cat smelled so much like cigarettes. It, you know, its coat, you know, you could just sniff it, and the cat had bad asthma. And
wow.
So when the lady herself had to quit smoking for health reasons, the cat's asthma improved. Well, we can take, cats from these types of situations with allergic forms of bronchitis. Smoke is tough. It's dreadful. It has a lot of different toxins in it. It's irritating in itself. And it, our,
yeah.
our respiratory tracts get overtaxed trying to get rid of it, and it ends up accumulating. So it's a tremendous irritant and a potential allergen and a potential carcinogen. So we don't know if secondary smoke is directly caused in some of these cases, but we have pretty good indirect evidence. So I think if it's not good for us, it's not good for them. It's definitely not good for your grandmother. And I think, you know, cooler heads prevail, and maybe we could help her be healthier and smoke. It's terrifically addictive. You know, I think, mm-hmm. for me to quit smoking, I had to wear nicotine pants.
And, wow.
And so pants?
I think that we have to realize that we need to provide these guys with a safe environment, okay? And
right.
that goes with that. So that's a great question, and I think you're right on the money. And I think that it's cumulative over time. I mean, you know, she isn't probably that active, and the dog's in there all day with her, and you know, she smokes, and so, you know, she's exposing them to irritants and potential allergens and toxins, yeah, that nobody wants to be exposed to.
Yeah,
and the animal has no choice. The animal has no choice. So, all right, thanks, kid.
I'm sorry. If you think,
did you have another question?
Yes, the animal like had respiratory symptoms, and my grandmother like stopped smoking so much indoors. You think they could improve?
No question. No question.
So you can tell your grandpa that. Go on.
No, I think it's suspicious that many of these animals have these, you know, these similar problems, and so you know, their respiratory tract is not that much different than ours, and so I think we have to show good judgment for them. It's another thing of being a guardian and being accountable and responsible for them.
Thank you very much for the call, Gabe, and happy holidays to you.
Happy holidays,
Gabe. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, we've got questions coming in right and left now. We have a question that just came in from email, and this is from Hillary in Boulder. And she has two questions. What is the best resource for finding out a complete list of toxic foods and plants and drinks for pets? Maybe the ASPCA, or is there somewhere else?
That's
the first
question. There is the Rocky Mountain Poison Center here in Denver. My friend Dr. Bronstein put together a handout, so we've got that's one resource. There is the National Poison Hotline, and they have a lot of things online, and they are at Champaign-Urbana at the University of Illinois, and that's the National Poison Hotline, and so you can get that online, and so the National Animal Poison Hotline. And there also are books, the bookstores will have different first aid for animals, and the Red Cross puts out a book, and so there's several. And then there are, there's a lot of veterinary books. There's Peterson's book that is a wonderful book, Small Animal Poisonings, and lists almost every possible poison.
And then related to that, to poison, in fact, her second question is, if one uses peroxide for inducing vomiting, does it need to be new peroxide? I've heard that the efficacy declines as the peroxide gets older.
I've heard that, but I don't know that it's true. We use about a cc per pound is what we tell people, but we have other drugs that we can give intravenously that can, you know, get everything right out. We only have 2 to 4 hours to make them vomit before things move through the stomach and get into the intestines where we can't make them vomit. So, you know, time is of the essence. There's a critical period. And that's why it's so important, I think, to have a good relationship with your veterinarian and tell them when you're coming, you know, what you think they ate and how much. Take the original container. There may be a 1-800 number, a manufacturer's number, and they can tell you about poisonings. They can tell you about the active ingredient, and then we can do things.
The poisoning seems to be quite a very hot topic tonight. Another question from the chat room, and of course you can see these as well. I don't know if you're also multitasking and in the chat room, Doctor, but this question is, Now that the weather is colder, my neighbor has been getting mice in his house, so he put bait in his yard. Do I have to worry about my dogs getting a poisoned mouse that may come into our yard? If my dog eats a poisoned mouse, will she get sick from eating that poisoned mouse?
Right, right. Great question, great question. Relay poisoning, that's called. And not much of a problem. Not much of a problem. The mouse that is poisoned has so little that they would have to eat so many kilograms of mouse per pound of dog. But what they do have a problem with is it doesn't take very much of the actual poison itself. The old rodenticides were warfarin, and it was a cumulative killer. The mouse had to go back several times, and usually these are sweetened grains. They sweet them with molasses, so that the animals have a sweet tooth and will eat it.
And warfarin is an anticoagulant, right?
Right, and it causes the mouse to bleed. They bleed, and so do dogs and children when they eat it. It's non-target species. Don't see cats eat it so much, but we don't see the relay poisoning. That's a great question, and many people suspect that, but it doesn't really happen. It doesn't really. We've not seen that, and you would think that maybe they would, but the mouse doesn't have enough of the poison in it. They only weigh, a rat weighs probably 300 grams. A mouse may weigh 50 to 60. And so they can't eat enough mice to do it. But there are the poisons themselves that are very bad, and they sweeten these things. Probably the number one poison that we see in our practice is rodenticides. The heavyweight of the poisons, pound for pound with the highest fatality rate, is ethylene glycol, where we just have, a shot glass enough to kill a 20-pound dog. A tablespoon for a 10-pound cat. The other thing this time of year with the cold is that people don't realize is we shouldn't warm the car up and then go back in the house, leave the car in the garage running and then go back in and read the paper and finish our bagel. Because we don't realize that maybe the cat inadvertently has gotten in there. It only takes 10 minutes in a one-car garage for a 10-pound cat to get poisonous levels of carbon monoxide. And the other thing is that we saw yesterday is we saw a fan belt cat this time of year, where they climb up into the warm engine after the car has stopped, and then the next person that starts the car, the fan belt hits the cat and tears it up. So we have to be careful when we get into cars. And this time of year, if it's below 20 degrees, they should be indoors. With frostbite on cat's ears and tips of tails and noses and pads and, if it's bitter cold, we need to get them indoors.
Okay, we have a question now that's come in through Facebook, and I'm just going to read this word for word, if you don't mind, because I don't think otherwise I'll do it justice. And this will have to be our last question, because I can't believe we're almost out of time already. It says, I am babysitting the kitties of my next-door neighbor, and one is in heat, and he refuses to get her spayed, but it's painful to watch and certainly uncomfortable for her. Plus, there is a boy cat living there, but I think he is fixed because he shows no interest. But the guy speaks almost no English. He's from Taiwan. I assume she means the owner, not the boy cat. And I don't know how to comfort her. So I think the question is what to do for this poor cat who's in heat and can't get any relief.
Well, I think that she should talk to that guy and see if he's willing. She could do a low-cost there are low-cost spay and neuter clinics all over the country, and a lot of people, for a very reasonable price, you can get that cat spayed. Unspayed animals, female dogs, by spaying before they go into the first heat, by spaying under 2 years, we get a sparing effect on mammary tumors that we see in older animals. And so not only unwanted kittens, and puppies, but for mammary cancer. But the main thing is the unwanted puppies and kittens in this country. 3,000 puppies and kittens born every hour in the United States. So please, please, please be responsible and get your animals spayed and neutered. They're much better citizens and make much nicer pets.
Dr. Fitzgerald, we are out of time, and I'm sad because you have been wonderful, and I'm wondering if you would like to come back sometime and talk about overweight pets and anything else that's on your mind, because this was great.
Yeah, we didn't talk about the 10 emerging poisonings that I prepared. We didn't talk about, but there was so much fun, and hopefully it was, you try and put out the real stuff, and I'm certainly no expert, just a poor but honest veterinarian in the trenches, and trying to put out the real stuff for people to think about, and so, hopefully people will, they'll think about their animals and take care of them this holiday season.
Well, thank you very much again for being here. That was Dr. Kevin Fitzgerald, the emergency vet, and also a wonderful veterinarian in Denver and a stand-up comedian. He's quite the Renaissance vet. And have wonderful holidays. Next week, we have a holiday encore performance of our guest Gandhi's grandson, Mr. Arun Gandhi. Have a great holiday.